This NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loren. Well, there's a growing controversy over the preliminary plans unveiled last week by the University of South Florida's new president, Stephen Correll, over the reconsolidation of USF's three campuses, Tampa, St. Petersburg, and Sarasota. President Correll unveiled a preliminary blueprint last week that would move control of the St. Pete and Sarasota campuses back to Tampa. The state legislature ordered consolidation last year, and there's a November 1st deadline for the USF president to submit the first draft of his plan for consolidation. Currently, the regional chancellors in St. Petersburg and Sarasota have a lot of local control, including hiring faculty and managing academic budgets. That power has grown over the last 19 years. Much of that power would be taken away under the consolidation plan. In St. Petersburg, one of the most outspoken critics of the current consolidation plan is Ray Arsenault. He is the John Hope Franklin Professor of Southern History and Program Advisor of the Florida Studies Program at USF St. Petersburg, where he's taught since 1980. I spoke with him earlier today. Ray Arsenault, welcome to WMNF. Nice to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
I want to ask you about a quote. I saw a quote by you in the campus newspaper, the Crow's Nest, USF. You say that the way consolidation planning is going for us in St. Petersburg is a disaster. Why do you say that?
Well, I think when the whole consolidation process began, it was a piece of legislation sponsored by State Representative Chris Sprouls and Senator Jeff Brandis, and I think maybe it was started with the best of intentions to bring preeminence to the entire university, to maybe get us more resources. But I think they had no idea how this would turn the entire university upside down for a year and a half, basically force thousands and thousands of staff and faculty hours to try to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. And, the preeminence system was set up largely by alums from FSU and University of Florida in the legislature to funnel money to those two institutions. And it really wasn't to be distributed to other institutions. So now that USF has achieved preeminence, at least for now, and UCF and FIU are knocking at the door, there's no guarantee that the preeminence system will continue funneling money to the universities that meet these metric goals, various metrics that the legislature set up. In fact, this year, the first year that USF got preeminence, the legislature funded no money at all. So it appears that we've gone through all of this for very little benefit to the university. Who knows what will happen? But in the case of the St. Petersburg campus, we've been separately accredited now for 12 or 13 years. Kind of a semi-autonomous unit within the university. Judy Genschaft created kind of a system, and it's worked very well for us. We've flourished. The campus is stronger than ever. We have lots of wonderful new programs, a first-rate faculty, tremendous amount of community and civic engagement. We're so closely tied to Pinellas County and particularly to the city of St. Petersburg, and our students seem to be very happy and very productive, and it's everything that a state university, I think, should aspire to be. I think in several respects, the St. Petersburg campus is the best part of USF. We have smaller classes. A tremendous amount of attention is paid to our students. We have a first-rate research, a lot of it involving community projects, and some of it's applied, but we have a terrific faculty, and we've been just doing wonderfully. And then to be hit with this reorganization, I think we feel almost like, one of the emerging African nations during the 1960s, which finally won its independence from the British Empire. And now we're being recolonized, so to speak. I think what we didn't anticipate, although we feared it, that because we'd had so much experience over the years, and I've been on the campus for 40 years, and I've seen how the imbalance in size between the St. Petersburg campus and Tampa puts us really in jeopardy, that inevitably Tampa with an institution that large is going to run into problems. For example, this year they have a $25 million budget shortfall. We don't. But it's not that it has to be really come from malevolence, but it's natural that people at sort of the center of the empire have problems to solve, and they look to the colonies to try to help. And so we've been very vulnerable to transfers of funds and budget, but in the last 15 years or so, we've had quite a bit of control and over our own destiny, and I think we've done so well with that freedom. And I think really we're a model for a state university, unlike the kind of more industrial factory system that operates at so many of the larger campuses, University of Florida, FSU, and USF in Tampa. So we're proud of what we've been able to accomplish. But the current proposal that the new president, Stephen Corral, has signed off on, at least tentatively, and that came out of Provost Ralph Wilcox's office, transfers virtually all of the academic authority, all of the decision-making to Tampa. So we're sensitive. All these decisions, even micro-decisions, that seem to be will be done by people, 45 miles away, who really aren't on site and don't really know anything about our programs, at least now. And we're of course, I think, perfectly willing to collaborate with our Tampa colleagues, and would like to have more contact with them. But the transfer of authority, ending the existence of our chief academic officer. We won't have a provost, and out of the present proposal, our chancellor will be essentially a glorified development officer with no academic authority. Our departments, for the most part, and our colleges and schools will be eliminated and will be folded into Tampa. And we just don't know where that's going to take us. We know where we are now, very proud of what we've been able to do. And of course, the original sponsors, Jeff Brandis and Chris Sprouls, saw to it that legislation was passed earlier this year to protect us. They saw what was happening, and they guaranteed that we would have the status of a branch campus. The alternative is to turn us into an instructional site, just outlying classrooms, and that appears to be what's happening. And we're very upset about it. I think the many people in Pinellas County and St. Petersburg are very upset that they're really losing a precious resource in the community, that we will lose control, and that a lot of the initiative and the momentum that we have will be lost. So it's been extremely troubling. Not everyone is reacting the same way, but there are a lot of people who are very worried and despondent over what's happening.
Our guest is Ray Arcidoe, who's president of the USF St. Petersburg Faculty Senate, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. So is there a way for USF as a whole to keep its preeminent status, and also for USF St. Petersburg to keep this autonomy that it's fought for and won and used in the way that you described over the last 12 or 13 years? Is there a way to do both?
Well, I think there is. It may depend on what the accrediting agency, the SACS as we call it, how they decide. They have a category called a branch campus, and it involves having separate hiring control and budgets and control over, at least some control over, the academic. That's all we're asking for, is to fulfill that and not to be turned into an instructional site. Again, I've been here for 40 years. When I came in 1980, we were much smaller. We were never an instructional site. We've always had a chief academic officer over here. We've always, either legal or extra legally, have had control over much of our curriculum, and I think we've been great stewards of that power that we were given. I think there are compromises. I think it can be done. I think some people obviously look for administrative efficiency, it's really I think following a corporate model. There's one boss, and everyone takes orders from that boss, and I think that doesn't work in a university environment. That's a terrible model for us to follow. I think the people who really care about these programs are the ones on site here who have developed them, oftentimes having to go really against opposition from programs in Tampa who felt threatened or who weren't really interested or thought there might be duplication. And so we've had to fight for everything we've got, but we've had such a special spirit on the campus over the years. And it's really a very special place, a sense of community and pride. And I think there have got to be ways that President Corral can work this out. And I think he's now getting significant pressure, I hope anyway, from the legislature to abide by the legislation that was passed earlier this year to guarantee us the branch campus status. I think right now they're really in defiance of that legislation, and that's a terrible way for President Corral to start his presidency and a terrible way for the university to operate. And, we're not asking for any special favors, just to be treated with respect and not with condescension. We feel that we're every bit as good as the institution across the bay, and we just want to be able to continue to operate on that level. So I certainly hope there's compromise, we'll see in the coming weeks, I guess.
For the constituencies over there in St. Petersburg, the students, the faculty, the community, what are your worst fears about what they might see under the consolidation proposal as it is now?
Well, I'm afraid that some of our best faculty will leave. There have been rumblings about that. Who wants to be just part of an instructional site? We didn't hire people to do that. I wasn't hired to do that. We've put our heart and soul into this campus, and so it's just it'll be a deflation of our energy and our commitment. And we're so engaged with the community. We're so involved with the museums and nonprofits, we are St. Petersburg in a sense. It's really a level of community and civic engagement that I think, frankly, the Tampa campus can only dream about. We can do it because we're small. There are certain disadvantages, but there are advantages in being small. We can, for example, our Florida Studies program that I helped create 15 years ago, we never could have done that in Tampa. With the interdisciplinary program, you would have had to get 15 people to sign off, to losing part of their turf. Well, we didn't have any turf over here. We've been able to do these interdisciplinary programs in biology and in Florida Studies and many others, psychology, that be almost impossible at a larger, more rigorously structured institution. But I think there's just our place in the community is really in jeopardy.
And Ray, one last question. We're taping this at 9 a.m. You have a faculty senate meeting at 9:30 this morning. You'll be on the air.
It's not a faculty senate meeting. It's the faculty system council, which represents all of the. I'm on that as well. And actually, Deanna Michael, who's an education professor here in St. Petersburg, is the chair. And we have people from all three campuses. And we are looking at all the consolidation material. So things like tenure and promotion guidelines and faculty governance and just about everything. And so we've been doing this, we meet once a month, but we've been at various subcommittees and things for weeks, for months, really. And so we're meeting this morning and try to sort all this out so that everyone benefits. But we're, St. Petersburg is the one part of the, and I think Sarasota as well, where, it affects everybody in the university, but it's turned our world upside down in a not very productive way.
I was going to ask, what's the sense? I mean, what kind of phone calls, what kind of emails are you getting on this topic? What are you seeing posted on social media from students, from the community, from the faculty about this?
Well, I've gotten a tremendous amount of communication, almost all concerned and trying to figure out what on earth is going on. I think the problem that people keep mentioning is that what we need is equity across the campuses, equity in teaching loads, equity in salary, equity in research funds. And you would think under a preeminent system where everybody's part of the same university, that would be guaranteed. But they don't seem to be able to do that. And they estimate that it would cost $100 million. To bring Sarasota and St. Petersburg up to the same level of resources And that has a lot to do with the sciences. You know, I mean, our incoming biologists, you know, get just a fraction in terms of startup money that they get in Tampa. And yet, under the new preeminent system, they'll be held to the same promotion and tenure standards, expecting the same productivity. So we're hoping that they will guarantee that we will have the same course loads, we will have the same everything, really. It's all we're asking for, not any special favors, just to abide by the spirit of true preeminence. You know, we really do have a university that's one university geographically distributed, as they put it. But we can't be held to the same standards when we have just a fraction of the resources and we are asked to teach two or three times as much as faculty members in Tampa. It's just it's a formula for failure. And so we hope that they'll be able to come up with the money that's necessary to make this work. If we're going to have consolidation, we've got to do it right.
You've been very measured in this entire interview, but is it too strong to say, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but is it too strong to say that this is a power grab by the Tampa campus?
Well, I think that's often been mentioned, and I think there seems to be truth in that. I don't know that this consolidation effort began with the Genshaft administration. I have no evidence that it did. But once it happened, you know, there have been people in Tampa who've wanted to, you know, essentially seize control for decades, and they've never been able to do it. And we've been successful in fighting for quite a level of autonomy. But it's a shift of social and cultural capital, really, from Pinellas County to Hillsborough, and it's not going to serve them well either. In some ways, we're trying to save them from themselves. They don't need to spend their time, you know, micromanaging us. You know, as I once said to President Genshaft when she came over years ago, you shouldn't be over here trying to micromanage us. You should be over here trying to figure out how we do so much with so little. And I even compared her to King George III. I said, you know, it didn't work out very well for him, and it's not going to work very well for you. And she backed off. And she had been a support until this consolidation thing happened. She was a big supporter of the system. Which we flourished under, you know, not putting everything Tampa-centric, but for some reason there's been a move to, you know, take the whole hog, so to speak, so we're sort of shocked by the aggressiveness of this new policy, but it's the new plan, but of course there's a certain. You know, preeminence sounds wonderful. Everybody wants to be preeminent. And it's, you know, on the surface, it sounds like they're going to bring more resources to us, but it doesn't seem to be happening, at least not in the short run. And it's just simply taking away our autonomy. And that troubles a lot of people. I mean, I'm sure, you know, some people may benefit from this and that's great, but we have a very, you know, The campus here is just it's a wonderful place. Has a very special character, and I hate to see it go. I put my whole career, my whole heart and soul into this. I'm not the only one. You know, hundreds of people who've you know, faculty and staff, and just so dedicated to the campus. And this has been very dispiriting for many of us.
When will the final decision be made? You know, what's your sense of a timeline, and also what's the best way for people to have input? If people are listening and are concerned about this,
I think you certainly could communicate with Senator Jeff Brandis and State Representative Chris Sprouls or any of the other legislators or to contact President Corral directly or Provost Ralph Wilcox and let them know how you feel. You know, we've alerted other local politicians, the city council and Mayor Kreisman, and they're all very much, from what I can tell, behind us. But, you know, this is like a steamroller right now, and it has to be supposedly done by November. And it won't go into effect until next July. But we're trying to slow it down a bit for people to reconsider, you know, what they're doing. You know, there have been a lot of cooks stirring the broth, so to speak, you know, to all kinds of clusters and task forces and committees. But the objections that have come from over here have, in my view, have not been listened to. They've just sort of brushed us off. And I think it's really to everyone's loss that has happened, that we have a lot of expertise over here about, you know, how to run a campus like this and what we need to do. And I think we've served our students so well. I mean, the watchword is student success. But I think we measure student success not just by the metrics that the legislature sets up, but by what really happens. We really, I think, are looking for true preeminence, not a kind of bureaucratic preeminence that is set up by legislators who probably don't have a great deal of knowledge about the way universities actually operate or should operate. So we're trying to stand up for the best traditions of university life and academic freedom and just letting us do our job. We've got so much to give, and we just hope we can continue to do so.
Ray Arsenault, thanks for coming on WMNF.
Oh, my pleasure, Rob. Thanks for having me.
That's Ray Arsenault, professor at USF St. Petersburg. He's the president of the USF St. Pete Faculty Senate, and he was discussing the plans for consolidation that were put out just last week by the University of South Florida's new president, Stephen Corral, to essentially reconsolidate the St. Pete and the Sarasota campuses back into the Tampa campus, giving more power to the Tampa campus. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And we're going to open up the phone lines and take some phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. David writes this: I think it's time for both schools to become completely independent so they won't have to worry about the whims of state legislators and USF leadership. I feel that New College has thrived as an independent school. And David goes on to say, I even have a new name suggestion for both of these schools, Suncoast University for Sarasota-Bradenton and Tampa Bay University for St. Petersburg. All right, that's David's idea. I'm going to mention some news stories that we might talk about, and let's see where you want to take this discussion. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And our email address here is dj@wmnf.org. Well, the United Nations says its panel of experts on Yemen have arrived in Saudi Arabia to investigate an attack on the kingdom's oil facilities a few days ago. A UN spokesperson says the inspectors have started their mission, undertaken at the invitation of Saudi authorities. Meantime, Iran's top diplomat said this morning that any attack on his country over a drone missile strike on Saudi Arabia's oil industry will result in an all-out war, further pushing up tension in the Persian Gulf. The comments were made by Iran's foreign minister, represented the starkest warning yet by Iran in a long summer of mysterious attacks and incidents following the collapse of Iran's 2015 nuclear deal with world powers. The U.S. unilaterally withdrew from that accord. The other world powers did not. And another instance has emerged of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau using brown and blackface makeup during parties and talent shows as a younger man. Canada's Global News television network has a broadcast of a brief video of Trudeau in blackface while raising his hands in the air and sticking out his tongue. Network says it obtained the tape, but says not clear when and where it was taken. Time magazine yesterday published a photo of the then 29-year-old Trudeau wearing a turban and a robe with dark makeup on his hands, face, and neck. It was taken at a school's Arabian Nights themed dinner. And if you want to comment about any of this so far, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. You can also send an email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Well, President Trump asked a federal judge this morning to block an effort by New York prosecutors to obtain his federal tax returns. Trump's attorneys filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in New York against the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., who recently subpoenaed the president's accounting firm for 8 years of Trump's state and federal returns. The lawsuit was not immediately made public, but Trump lawyer Jay Sekulow told the Associated Press the lawsuit is intended to address the significant constitutional issues at stake in this case. The lawsuit opens a new legal front in Trump's long-running fight to prevent his tax returns from becoming public. It comes as the Republican president already is fighting efforts by Democratic-led congressional committees to obtain his tax returns and other records that could provide a window into his finances. So we could talk about that, too. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Bill Grace is our phone producer today. The federal government's intelligence watchdog is set to testify in a closed session before the House Intelligence Committee today about the handling of a whistleblower complaint. The Washington Post reported today that the complaint involves an intelligence official's allegation that President Trump made an unspecified promise to an unidentified foreign leader. The Post cited two anonymous former U.S. officials. Intelligence Committee Chair Congressman Adam Schiff of California, a Democrat, says the inspector general determined the whistleblower complaint was credible and urgent and should be transmitted to Congress. Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is unveiling an ambitious plan to lower drug prices for seniors on Medicare and younger people with private insurance. Pelosi's office says she would empower Medicare to negotiate prices with drug companies for the 250 costliest prescription drugs, including insulin. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. No one knows what to expect, but people are preparing for Storm Area 51 in the remote Nevada desert. Visitors descending on the tiny towns of Rachel and Hyco, Nevada, near the once secret military research site, are headed there. Area 51 secrecy fuels fascination about UFOs and conspiracy theories. An internet joke inviting people to see them aliens has given rise to festivals near Area 51 this week. The military has warned people not to approach the protected site. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. And a federal judge in Miami cited new evidence of potential terrorism sympathies in denying bail for an airline mechanic charged with sabotaging an American Airlines jetliner. The judge imposed a pretrial detention for 60-year-old Abdul Majid Maruf Ahmed Alani at yesterday's hearing. New evidence presented by prosecutors includes that Alani has a brother in Iraq who may be involved with the Islamic State extremist group, as well as statements that Alani made about wishing harm on non-Muslims. Alani is a naturalized U.S. citizen from Iraq. He's not charged with a terror-related crime. And a Brandon man has been arrested on charges that he cyber-stalked and made racist threats against a black activist in the state of Virginia and tried to interfere with the activist plans to run for a seat on Charlottesville's city council. The Justice Department says 31-year-old Daniel McMahon of Brandon was arrested yesterday on charges that include bias-motivated interference with a candidate for elective office. Court records don't name the activist that McMahon is accused of harassing. The indictment accuses McMahon of using his social media accounts to intimidate the activist and interfere with the activist's political plans. Heidi Bayrock, the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project, says McMahon had social media posts shared by Pittsburgh synagogue shooting suspect Robert Bowers. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Frank in Sarasota, who has something on his mind. Hey, Frank, you're on. What's bugging you?
Well, what's bugging me is Donald Trump's plan to roll back the emission standards in California. I mean, he just seems to think that we need more pollution in California. And as a former Californian, I can tell you that I remember those days in the 60s and 70s when it was just really a mess to live around there.
What was it like when you lived there in the 60s
well,
and 70s?
Well, it was brown. The air was brown. I think I said before, when you're coming in on an airplane from someplace, you know, landing in L.A., you couldn't even see the ground until you were right on top of it. It was just a big brown cloud out there.
And so now the president is saying that California doesn't have a right to regulate air right. emissions from automobiles, that only the federal government has that right.
Right. And they're planning on suing California and the automakers in California if they don't, you know, if they don't pollute more. I mean, that's just the dumbest idea Bozo has thought of yet.
You know, and this is a little bit off topic, but I was walking my dog last night, and some guy in an old truck, unfortunately, drove by me, and the truck was spewing the worst fumes. And I go out for a walk at night with my dog because I'm trying to get some fresh air.
Yeah.
And here this guy is just, you know, you know, in a few years, when that truck driver gets rid of his old truck and gets a new truck, that new truck is going to be much better than that old truck.
Right.
In terms of pollution, yeah.
In California, you have to get a smog test every 2 years. At least that's how it was when I lived there. And they stick a little thing up your tailpipe, and if it doesn't pass, they have to spend some money.
So did those regulations work? Did you see, you said 60s and 70s, brown air all over California, or at least Southern California?
Yeah, so, Southern California, but, you know, in San Francisco, too, because I actually worked out of San Francisco. But I spent a lot of, in fact, I've actually been to Rachel, Nevada. I spent a lot of time in the wilderness in the middle of nowhere.
But, is that near Area 51?
Yeah, it's right near Area 51. The bar in town is a mobile home, a trailer.
Well, so the president, though, says, no, California, you can't be tougher on automobile manufacturers than the federal government is.
Right. And what are you saying?
And the president, I'm sure, is saying, well, air pollution crosses state lines. So since the pollution crosses state lines, you in California don't have a right to regulate your pollution. We'll take care of it. The federal government knows best.
I'm not sure what his reasoning is, to tell you the truth. I haven't heard anything, you know, come close to sound reasoning on that. I'm just getting wind of it. And actually, Paul Krugman had it in a column this past weekend that the Justice Department is going to file antitrust lawsuits in California for, you know, people not lowering the, you know, the auto companies in the state of California not lowering their air standards, their pollution standards.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem to me that if here in Florida, if we got a progressive legislature and they wanted to make water standards better, even though water flows from, you know, into the Gulf of Mexico and sometimes right. water flows into Georgia, it would seem fair that we would, if we wanted to protect our water, that we would have the right to do it. So logically, I don't know why California wouldn't have the right to protect its air, even though that air may drift. That's always the argument when you look at whether or not a state has control or the federal government has control. The argument is, well, if it affects more than one state, then the federal government has control. That's the legal argument, essentially.
And what they call prevailing westerlies push all the air out of California this direction.
Yeah,
you could see, not so much anymore, but you could see smog in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, so and if California is more populated than Arizona, that why would Arizona want that smog to come over? I mean, you know, you're not certainly not helping Arizona by increasing the smog or at least not taking a deeper stab at it.
Right. This whole thing makes no sense to me. That's all I was going to call up and complain about.
Okay, Frank, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Here's DeMarco saying, check out what we're paying for the Homestead Detention Facility in Florida. For a private prison, which President Trump has his ex-chief of staff on board, its board of directors. Yeah, you know, here's the interesting thing about Homestead. It's been closed down, right? They've taken all the kids out of it. They had something like 2,500 kids there who were mostly separated from their parents, immigrant children who arrived at the border. Now, in the last 46 days, it's been closed down. But guess what? We're paying $33 million to the company. So far, in the last 46 days, we've spent $33 million to the private company that operates that prison, even though nobody's being housed there. So if President Trump is a champion of good government spending, why are we spending $33 million on an empty facility? Maybe some of our Trump-supporting friends can call us up. 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And 813-239-9663. Edward writes this regarding California. Whatever happened to states' rights, Republicans? That's an interesting thing. I don't know. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to John in Port Richey. Hey, John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, a couple of things. First, on this California thing, I understand you're referencing the Commerce Clause, that if it
that's right.
across
that's
state
right.
lines, it's yep. interstate commerce. But I was always under the impression that the federal government made the baseline. The states couldn't go under that, but the states could go above that. So the state could enact a harder or more strict regulations on something. They just couldn't go under that line, whatever the federal government was. So maybe I'm wrong on that. And the other thing I was thinking is that, I don't know if you heard that several Republican or several primaries in Republican states have been canceled. By the Republican Party, I believe.
Yeah, several presidential primaries. In fact, I think I'll have to get a list, but I think most of the presidential primaries have been canceled because they don't want President Trump to have to fight for the nomination.
Correct. With the other two people that are in there, or is it three, I think, that are running against him? I can't remember.
I think there's three right now.
And I thought that was kind of interesting because I haven't heard anything from Hannity about how the Republicans are rigging the primary by doing this. But, boy, I remember he was saying that when the Democrats with the superdelegates. So does that make Hannity fair and balanced in a quote, real news person, unquote? I use that because he's opinion. Or would that be under fake news because he's not fair and balanced? That's my question.
All right. Well, let's see if some of our Hannity friends can call us up. But let's see how courageous they are. All right. John, thanks a lot. All right, we got one open line, 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. There are three candidates who are running against President Trump for the Republican nomination. We don't know if there's going to be primaries ultimately. But I saw a poll the other day that said that William Weld, who was a former governor of Massachusetts, who is one of the Republicans that's challenging President Trump, is already at 16% in New Hampshire, which is one of the early primary states. So I don't know what that says. 16% is not a lot, but it does say that at least 16% of the people who are Republicans in New Hampshire don't like President Trump. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. I wanted to mention this story. Both of Florida's U.S. senators, who happen to be Republicans, Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, today introduced legislation that would allow some Canadian citizens to spend up to 8 months a year vacationing in the U.S., 2 months longer than they're currently allowed to stay. According to the Canadian Embassy, Canadians who visit Florida contribute more than $6.5 billion each year to the state's economy. So they're going to extend the amount of time that Canadians will be allowed to stay here. And this comes at a time where Republicans like Rubio and like Scott and like President Trump are saying to some other people, we don't want you here. So what do you make of that? What do you make of this bill that Marco Rubio and Rick Scott are introducing? It's called the Canadian Snowbirds Act. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. You can also send your email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Nancy in St. Petersburg. Hi, Nancy. You're on WMNF.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, so you got Trump, who's not really concerned with more pollution in California. However, he is concerned with pollution because he calls the homeless there filth, and he also has suggested that the government, round them up and put them somewhere. And it seems to me that this fits in nicely with his plans for private prisons, where you can criminalize poverty as it's happening anyway, and and it looks like he's doing a good thing. And he calls them polluters because they take their dirty needles and throw them away, which wind up in the Pacific Ocean of all things. Really, this man has got to go. That's all I got to say. Thanks.
All right, Nancy, thanks a lot. Thanks. I've been talking to a lot of people who took wonderful vacations this year, and my Republican friends and Democratic friends, many of them have gone to Europe this summer. And I always ask them when they come back, I say, well, how many homeless people did you see in Europe when you were there? And almost to a person, they say, there's practically no homelessness anywhere in Europe. Why is that? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Fran in Largo. Hey, Fran, you're on MNF.
Oh, thank you, Rob. Yes, I'm a little off what I was going to say, but yes, with that woman was just talking about, that bothers me. Trump, leave the homeless alone. I mean, I don't want any final solution type things done to any homeless people. It just... Everything I hear out of them is chilling to me, anymore. Any kind of words out of Trump about homeless people or anything like that, it just bothers me. Now, what I wanted to mention was this secretive promise that he made to some world leader. I'm thinking maybe it was Putin, and it had something to do with drilling for oil, splitting up the Arctic or the Antarctic or maybe even Alaska. I think it was, I just have a hunch it was something to do with that, a promise about that. And one more thing I wanted to say, if it makes any sense, all these Second Amendment supporters, the part of it that says there shall be a well-armed militia in case there is, basically in case the government goes wrong and has to be taken care of. Now, the government is going wrong now. If there was any reason to have an uprising, I know you've said in the past that people with their guns would be no match for the, our armed forces. But still, if there was any reason for there to be an uprising like that, I feel it would be now with what's going on. That's what I wanted to say.
Fran, you're not going to take up arms against your government. My guess is that you're going to go out and vote and work for candidates that you care about. You're not going to. Your choice is not to buy an AR-15 and hunker down in your house with your MREs and wait for the government to come. You're going to go out there and work for candidates, right?
That's what I want to do, yes, but these people, these gun rights activist type people, the way they think is like, it's still amazing to me that they haven't gone and done this yet. They keep drinking this Trump Kool-Aid.
And isn't there something un-American by saying that if the government does something that you don't like, that you're going to take up guns against your government? Isn't the way to, if you don't like a government decision, or if you don't like an elected official, it's not to call them up and threaten them as that guy in Brandon did. The way you deal with something you don't like in government is you get behind a candidate, you work for that candidate, maybe you yourself run for office, maybe you donate to that candidate, you call into radio stations, you write letters to the editor, go down and protest in front of the congressman's office if you don't like what they do, but you get involved in a nonviolent way and get involved in an organization that meets your needs, nonviolent way.
You are absolutely right, and that's the civilized way of doing this. However, Trump and company seems to be just walking all over our civilized way of doing things. Look at that Lewandowski the other day, the way he talked to Congress, the disrespectful, they have no regard for it. So, I mean, my point is they are just pushing the envelope and pushing the envelope, and I just don't want to see this country collapse into fascism. That's all. So I'm for doing things the civilized way, but I hope it gets us what we want. And
all right,
we have to keep trying.
All right, Fran, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. And let's go to Danny in Largo. Danny, you're on WMNF. What's up?
Hi, Rob. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, actually, I'm listening to Fran from the last call, and I agree with her on so many points. She hit it, but she missed it. My actual thing was that I just heard that Rick Scott and Rubio have suggested that we have an 8-month visitation for Canadians.
Yeah, the Canadian Snowbirds Act. Yeah,
grandstanding because the Canadian government insurance only allows 6 months.
Oh, really? So you have to go back?
I have plenty of Canadian neighbors. I got to go back.
Yeah,
my insurance doesn't work after today.
Yeah, your health insurance only lasts for 6 months, and then do you have to buy supplemental insurance if you're Canadian and you get?
Well, that's actually with a supplemental.
Oh,
that was actually with a supplemental, according to my Canadian friends. So they can go ahead and grandstand all they like, which they always do. So that was my contention. I mean, unfortunately, our representation doesn't represent people. They represent their own interest.
Yep, that is a big problem. All right. Well, Danny, thanks a lot. Thanks for the phone call.
You're welcome.
All right. Good to hear from you. And you are listening to WMNF in Tampa. If you want to add to this conversation, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Kevin writes this: Trump claims the cars will be safer and cheaper to buy once his new standards are in effect. Does anyone really believe that? And Kevin goes on to write, also, mountain climbers cannot climb his wall, and it's the best and greatest wall ever. This joke must end before the joke is on us. Yes, the president was in Southern California yesterday showing some of the parts of a replacement wall that is going up, and it seems to be higher and stronger. He's really not adding any miles to the wall. He is replacing some of the old wall. The president made the claim that the new wall, higher wall, was tested by mountain climbers. And he said, we had 20 mountain climbers test this wall. And it would be interesting to see who those 20 mountain climbers are. Did they come forward? Who are they? What kind of mountain climber would test the wall? Maybe the president's telling the truth. I don't know. Wendell writes this, playing a black person at a party isn't derogatory in itself. If a white person wants to portray singer James Brown or Tiger Woods, you'd have to put on makeup. What's the problem with that? Writes Wendell. Even if it's social commentary on the personality of the black person, it should not be taken as derogatory. Wendell says, context is what matters. How could a white person play Clarence Thomas in whiteface? That's Wendell's words from St. Petersburg. And Elijah says, we need to get Trump over to Cape Canaveral as soon as possible and get him fit for his Space Force suit so he can launch off and command outer space. Then we can start a much-needed Earth Force and protect what's most important, writes Elijah. Well, let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Lynn in Newport Richey. Hi, Lynn. You're on. Which one of these news items do you want to comment about?
To comment about the homeless situation in California and the remark that one of your callers made about Trump saying that they were polluters. I'm a registered nurse and I've lived all over California. I have worked with these homeless. I have had them in the ER. I've had them in ICU. And when they do come in, they have 90% of them have lice. They have resistant TB that we don't have any antibiotics for. They have typhus, which is coming from the rats, which are now heavily polluting the L.A. area, especially Skid Row. They have fleas, which are presenting this typhus into them. They also have a lot of hepatitis A. They're urinating and polluting the streets with feces, which has E. coli, and just a whole barrage of diseases. So, yes, in essence, it is a petri dish, and yes, in essence, it is a polluter. When nurses and doctors are getting sick and police officers are getting sick, it is not fair to the community. It's not fair to the children. It is not fair to the other people. And what do we do with them? The solution is to round them up, clean them up, give them mental health, give them put them into classes where they can have behavioral modification and help them that way, and give them places to stay, like shelters. We do it for everybody else in the country. And the reason why these other countries don't have homeless, such as Australia, you're not even allowed to go there to live unless you've got a degree. They don't have any such thing as welfare and food stamps. So there's a lot of reasons why a lot of countries don't have the homeless situations. But I feel sorry for these people that are homeless, and I don't agree with the lady who called in before to said leave them alone. They're only going to become more and more of them, and you don't leave them alone. Years ago, when Skid Row started, it was just a block of cardboard boxes that these people were creating for shelter. Now it goes on for over 2.5 miles, and it is very much, it smells to high heaven.
Well, Lynn, I agree with you. I mean, you've got to give them treatment. You've got to give them shelter. If they're mentally ill, you've got to help them. But one thing you said there that I don't think is true, and that is, you said Australia doesn't have a social welfare system. I think Australia has a pretty good social welfare system. And I think that they do have whatever the equivalent of food stamps is. I'll have to look it up. But Australia is often listed as one of the top social democracies in the world. That means that they have a strong social safety net. And so, but I think you're right on every other point.
Yeah, and we do need to help them, and we help everybody else. I mean, heaven forbid, I do not have anything against aliens or people coming into this country, but I do have a problem with giving them free everything and then not having these poor people that have, you know, had at one time had a life perhaps, and perhaps went into the streets because of some horrible thing that happened to them and they just couldn't cope with it,
yeah.
And veterans, et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
but we do need to help them. We do need to clean up the streets, and we can't just let it just sit there and ride.
I agree. Well, Lynn, thanks a lot.
Is doing.
All right, Lynn, thank you. You know, I'm wondering how many of those homeless people are veterans. And if you look at the social democracies in Europe that don't have the kind of wars that we have, is it because we have so many veterans who have experienced horrific conditions in war, come home, aren't able to cope, and are living out in the streets? We certainly saw that after Vietnam. We saw that after the first Iraq invasion. And I think the numbers show that a lot of people who are homeless right now are veterans. So what can we do? You know, and why does Europe, why do places like Australia, when your friends go to Europe, or maybe you went to Europe this summer, you don't see the number of homeless people in those countries. Why? Why do we have so many homeless? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. James writes this. I'm not sure this is helpful, but he says, in order to be Republican, you must be a hypocrite. Use God every time you need to. Have no self-respect and follow marching orders. That's James' opinion that he wrote in. And let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Bob in Tampa. Hey, Bob, you're on. What would you like to say?
How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling in.
I was pretty freaked out this morning to hear Elaine Chung berating California for their higher standards of emissions controls and telling them that it's illegal for them to do that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that she, if California wants to have cleaner air, why shouldn't they have cleaner air?
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. All right, Bob, is that your point?
Thank you.
All right, thanks for calling in. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Clifford in Tampa. Clifford, you're on WMNF.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I just wanted to call in with a new name for Donald Trump. And it's for Elizabeth and all the good listeners and supporters of this station. His name is now Donald Dump. And a dump stands for all the garbage coming out of his mouth. So,
yeah, but Clifford, can I ask, how does that advance the conversation, though, if we name call?
I know I'm kind of being like them, but it's just every time I hear his mouth, I just can't believe like the thing in California. Those people had a problem with that smog because they got so many cars and trucks and people coming in there picking up the big roll off things for delivering the stuff from China and everywhere. And my goodness, oh God. I remember when I first come to Tampa, out there on Bayshore, they had that sewage problem where it smelled like crap when you went down Bayshore because of the sewage treatment plant.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say that as for everybody, is he's just Donald Dump.
All right.
He's just garbage mouth.
All right.
Everything comes out of his mouth.
All right. Clifford, thanks a lot. Thanks. You know, I think what that does, though, is it sets everybody who's a Trump supporter back on their heels and says, well, I don't like Clifford, or I don't like people that don't like President Trump. So, you know, a lot of people voted for President Trump. They think they did the right thing. What's the argument? What are the reasons? What's the logic behind your opposition to President Trump, if that's what you want to call and talk about? But I'm sure Clifford's a great guy, but I don't think name-calling helps out. Let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, happy Thursday. Yep. On the auto emissions and driving prices up or driving prices down, I do work at car dealerships every day. I grew up in the muscle car era, as did my wife, and we constantly berate car manufacturers for what they're doing. What's driving the prices up is all the technology that they're putting into these cars to protect people from themselves, which in turn just causes them to be more lackadaisical in their responsibilities behind the wheel. I mean, look at all the hot car deaths that we've had with children. I feel bad for the parents that have had this happen, but on the other hand, I don't, because it just shows a lack of responsibility. And now by shoving all this extra technology into the vehicles, which is all flawed technology because it hasn't had the time to work the bugs out of it, it just causes people to be, you know, to, you know, go ahead and play on your phone. Your car will save you. Go ahead, you know, look at the Tesla guy that went into the
Yeah, that was bad. Andy, I'm sorry to say we're out of time. Well, if you're a listener who did not call in and you want to comment about today's show, please call us up and make a comment. You can call us at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks to Bill Grace. He was our phone producer today. The Surly Feminists are coming up next right here on WMNF.